I'll bet you didn't know there were a few gutsy women who began flying shortly after the Wright brothers, and in a few cases, long before them. Now that you know that, how would you like to read poetry that highlights these amazing women? Well, I've got an award-winning author I'd like you to meet, whose book of poems will let you imagine what each of these women aviators was thinking while she was achieving her goals and reflecting on her accomplishments. Stick around, because we're going to learn more about her book and the writing process she followed to create it.
Welcome to A Book Finds You podcast. This week's guest is Pat Valdotta. Join us as she shares the inspiration behind her book, along with her writing process, routines, and challenges. And now, here's your host, best-selling author Rob Jellis.
Today's guest, Pat Valdotta, is a poet and a novelist, a retired university professor, and, I'm not surprised, a pilot. Her second poetry book, Where No Man Can Touch, won the 2015 Donald Justice Poetry Prize, and a revised edition was published in 2023. Pat's work has appeared in literary magazines including Beta Ocean, Ecotone, Little Patuxent Review, and North American Review. Happy to have you with us and welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you, Rob. It's delightful to be here.
Good. I like delightful. There you go. A pleasure to have you here as well. Delightful to have you here as well. And let's get it covered right out of the gate. We call the show A Book Finds You because we don't find it. It finds us. I don't think I have to look real hard to get the answer here, but how did the book find you, or the book of poems?
Well, you might be surprised. Obviously, yes, I'm a pilot, so I understood that I fly thanks to the efforts of all these women who went before me. But what really started it was I was at a poetry conference, and I'm ashamed to admit I was in a very boring panel discussion, and my mind was wandering. And all of a sudden, it's as though the pilot, Bessie Coleman, was just there with me. It was almost like we were at a pilot's lounge instead of in this big conference hall. And she just started telling me her story, and I was jotting it down. And before I knew it, I had the bones of a sonnet written in front of me. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, because I really hadn't written many sonnets, and it's a fun form to play with. And I really enjoyed it so much that I thought, I'd like to do more of these. And that got me down a wonderful rabbit hole of doing research for quite a while to find who were these other pilots. I was always asking myself, who was the first one to fly a glider? Who was the first one to fly a Zeppelin? Who was the first one to fly an airplane? And, you know, who broke records? And just to try to find out who some of these women were. And I discovered that they had in their day been newspaper headline famous. I mean, everybody knew who they were. And then one by one, they fell out of obscurity. And I'll bet every time I say, do you know a woman pilot, almost everybody says, well, yeah, Amelia Earhart. And she's the only one that most people know. And it made me feel really bad that these women have kind of dropped out of aviation history. So I decided I would continue writing poetry about them, and ended up with a whole book.
And that's how a book finds you, folks. You know, I keep it on my wall here. I don't know if we call it a poem, but it's just a basic phrasing that says, thinking about writing is not writing, planning to write is not writing, preparing to write is not writing, writing is writing. Yeah. And yet, you know, there was some research behind this. How long did you spend researching before you kind of cut it loose and started putting the book together?
I researched probably for close to a year, I think, from when I first did that. There was a lot to find out. Obviously, the internet, wonderful resource out there. I was able to get a lot of information just by Googling people's names and histories. But I also knew people in the aviation community who were also writers, so I was able to contact them. And I contacted a number of aviation museums and got wonderful help from those folks as well. So I really spent a period doing quite a lot of research. The problem was I was working, I was teaching at the time, so I didn't have a lot of time available to do the writing. So what I did was I applied for a residency at a writing artist's residency, the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, and I got a 2-week residency there, and I had all my research in a big binder and went down there, and I set myself the task. I was going to do a draft in the morning and a draft in the afternoon. And by the time I was done, I should have 25, 26 poems in draft form that I could then take home and revise and work on. And it worked really well. I was able to spread out, put my research up on bulletin boards, look at photographs, get the feeling of what these women were going through. And then I just focused and just every day would go there and just write and write and write. And it was really fun. It was really intense. It was a lot of hard work, but I left with my goal. I had half the book written in draft form by the time I left that residency. And then I was able to get a second residency and I went back and I did the same thing. So the draft got done in a 4 week period of very intense writing.
You're almost like old school. I when I work with publishers, I always smile when they go, and we got an advance. It's not a big advance, whatever. And I'm thinking, your advance. The advance is for like the 1930s when it was like, I've got this idea and I got to go to a fishing hut and write it, and I need money to buy soup and food while I'm, creating this novel. Nowadays, we don't quite do it that way. And yet you kind of did, minus the advanced part.
Minus the
You
advance for
really
sure.
you sequestered yourself. Were you, as a professor, did you have to, were you writing as a professor?
Not nearly as much as I would like to, because I, when you teach English and creative writing, you're just constantly grading papers. And so all the assignments were written assignments, and I'd have to provide really detailed feedback to my students. And you have to provide very careful feedback to student writers because they're fresh, they're untried, they don't understand how much you have to revise, how often you get rejected. So I had to be very careful of their feelings all the time. So I had to, it takes a lot of time to write thoughtful, kind, but useful comments. And you know, if I was teaching anywhere from, 50, 60 to 100 students a semester, that took up a lot of time. So I rarely got any writing done when I was teaching.
And the university didn't make it a requirement for you to publish?
Well, I had already published. I already had a couple of novels out, and I had a book of poetry out before then and a chapbook. So I already was published, but
Now we're leading to the poem part. There you are re researching. I'm putting myself in your shoes going, okay, I'm going to research these women. And it was interesting you mentioned Amelia, because we all know that name. And I don't know any other name. So I think that's right out. You had me at that right there. And yet you chose to write to research and then take your research and write poems about them. Any thought of taking the research and writing short stories about them?
No, actually, I don't write short stories well. I can write a novel and I can write a poem. Those are my two genres. And I just didn't want to fictionalize it. I really wanted it to be real. And I didn't want to just write a nonfiction piece about them because I just didn't think it would be as much fun for me. I really wanted to have fun doing this book. I love poetry. I love writing poetry. And at that point, I was really starting to get into writing poetry in forms. And I've really enjoyed that too. It's a challenge when you get the constraint that it has to be so many lines, or that the line has to be so long, or you have to have this kind of rhyme scheme. It just adds this layer of complexity. So then when I'm focusing on that, it releases some kind of creativity that I wouldn't have had if I were just writing a traditional free verse poem, which is mostly what I had written up to that point.
That's interesting. And you hit on a big word there. And I wish people who are listening and thinking about it, I want to write a book. It's supposed to be fun. And, and that's why the book has to find you. Because if you're just looking, it's already a recipe for something that's just going to be very difficult. We don't just wake up in the morning with a manuscript. That's a very fast manuscript we heard. And still, it was a very intense period of time. A lot of us, when you really spread it out and go, well, I'm going to put in a few hours each week, really, we're all putting in the same hours. It's tough. But I love the fact you said, this is fun for me. I enjoy it because it really is. It's like you're kind of married to this project. It's intimate in a sense. So
Yes, it is.
daggone it, we better have fun doing it. Not every day's
Absolutely.
fun. Not every day, but most of them should be. Quick question to you, as a struggling poet myself, I don't write poetry books. My books are business books. But do you begin with the end in mind when you write a poem?
No, never.
And tell us,
Never.
and tell us why. Folks, you can't see her face, but that's a very opinionated no. Okay, I saw it. So tell me, you certainly have an opinion there. Tell me why.
Right. Well, I was writing these poems in the first person. They're all persona poems. So I was placing myself in the shoes of these women, trying to imagine what they felt. And if I had an ending already picked out, I would have to force the poem to go to that ending. And I don't like doing that when I write. When I write novels, I prefer to start out with an idea and a character and see what happens and let the story unfold naturally. So I wanted to do that with the poetry as well. So that's why I would get my pilot, put her in a situation, and then see what happened after that as I'm trying to write this poem in a particular form. So that was sort of the process of the individual poetry.
All right. And so is there an outline to the poem or again, no?
Well, again, if you're writing in a particular form, yes, you have to follow that form. So for example, a sonnet, it's either 3 4-line stanzas with a couplet at the end, or you do an 8-6 stanza, and it has to have some kind of twist or turn in the middle of it. And if you're writing a very traditional one, the line should be iambic pentameter, and then you have to follow the particular rhyme scheme of that type of sonnet. So yeah, I would have that as my outline, if you want to call it that. But then the poem still had to use contemporary language and flow and make sense as sentences. It had to tell the story of this woman in her own words. So it was really hard. I mean, I don't want people to think it was not hard work, because it really was hard work, but it was just such a challenge to do that. It was so much fun that I really enjoyed it, and it was great. And then I would have this first draft, nice framework to use. And then when I went home, I could take my time and revise and make sure that I got everything exactly the way I wanted it.
Okay, so let's help some listeners out here. If we don't, if we can't be sequestered for a couple of weeks, coach us a little bit. We've got some people who are thinking, I'd love to put maybe a book together or maybe a book of poems together. What would be your recommendation? A certain number of times each week, you know, hold to certain hours a day. Let the week come to you. Any thoughts on that?
I would be a complete hypocrite if I said you should write every day and at a certain time. I don't do that. I'm really bad at that, which is one reason why I really love writing residencies. They really help me focus away from the distractions of home. There's no dog to feed. I don't have to cook or do laundry or any of that stuff that gets in the way. I'm retired from teaching now, so that helps me a lot. I can get to my desk every day and sit down and get to work now, which I didn't have the luxury of doing when I had a job. So yeah, if you're retired, then yes, you can get your butt in the chair and write and do some of that every day. And that would be a good practice. People who have families to take care of and jobs, it's really, really, really difficult to squeeze in that time. Now, writing poetry helps a little bit because they're short. And so if all you have is a half hour, you can get a draft written in a half hour. If you're really pressed, you can get a draft written in 10 or 15 minutes if you're really desperate. And I know a lot of poets have done that. You know, any scrap of paper they have, or they speak it into their phone and save it, do whatever they can to get that initial draft down, and then later on do the work of making it a good poem. But I'm a huge fan of writing residencies. If anyone can go to one of those, you're in a place where creativity is just everywhere around you. You're meeting other people. You find out what their process is like. You find out what their art is like. You get to see the end product sometimes if there's an art show for a visual artist or a composer who does a short concert, or other people would do a reading of what they've been writing there. And it just makes you want to do more. And it just is the environment is just so perfect that you can get this work done in a very intense period and get an awful lot of work done. So I do recommend for people who have really stressful day jobs or families, if you can get away even for a week, it is such a gift to be able to do that and get the writing done. And otherwise, you just fit it in wherever you can.
When you're at a residency, is there internet there?
The
You
ones
know
I
where I'm
went
going
to,
with this
when I
question?
was writing this book, the internet they had was very poor, and that actually helped because it didn't distract me. I didn't get online and check my email and do all that. So yeah, I do make a bargain with myself when I'm at a residency. I do not check email or do anything on the computer until I've gotten the writing done. So then when I'm tired in the afternoon, that's when I catch up with the real world. But I don't do that. And I'm really bad at that at home because the first thing I want to do in the morning is check my email and see what I have to do or what's going on. So I'm really bad at that at home. And I keep trying to say, Pat, get in your office, close the door, act like you're at a residency. And I'm just really terrible at doing that. But
I
my
think
dog
that's
is a riot because she knows that I come in here and I work every morning. So she precedes me. And I know if I've been dilly-dallying too long over my coffee because she'll be in my office waiting for me. It's
Yeah,
like
no,
she
I've
knows.
got a cat that's the same way and looks almost annoyed when I'm a
Yeah.
little delayed getting up there. It's like, what's the
Yes.
story? I got to
Yeah.
take a nap and you're still down here reading the
Right.
paper? Let's go.
Exactly. Where have you been? Yeah, let's get to work.
But I think it's an important point to hear. Just how disturbing the internet, email can be. And there are numbers
Right.
out there about, although we think when we hear a bing, and I'm just going to take a quick look and make sure it isn't important, that it's still, there are numbers out there that it's 10 to 15 minutes before we're kind of really back where we were mentally. So
Right.
it's, I think it's a con game when we say, I'll just be careful. I like the idea of just, zero tolerance on those emails. And if you can't
Yeah.
get to a residency, I know I've gotten myself to the research areas of libraries where they're,
Right.
that one room where no one talks,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
you almost feel like you're going into a vault,
Yes.
but there's not, no emails, and it's quiet in there,
Yeah.
and that way we can get this work done. Because I'm with you. I'm not a guy who programs every day as where the writing will take place.
Right.
But I am a person who will say, I'm not a poet, more I'm putting stringing words together in chapters. I am a person who says, here's how many words I'm going after every week. And some weeks are easier than others. But
Right.
if it's Friday and I really haven't done a whole lot, guess what? My weekend's not going to be, I'm not going to be watching football with the fellas. I didn't get my job done. And so we
Right.
bargain and we just try and find, but everybody has their own way. And for me, it's more of a word count. I don't do page counts because, I went to school too. I mean, I love double spacing and, let's make that font bigger so I can see better. But word counts don't lie. They'll tell you what a
Yes.
manuscript looks like.
Yes, definitely. And I love your idea of going to a library because libraries need more support now than ever. So the fact that you're in there, your presence, it's another count. They can say we've had so many people come in and use the library this week. So you give them a little bit of a statistic, and I think that's a great thing to do.
Well, thank you. I hadn't even thought of that. I get a little annoyed. I shouldn't say annoyed when I get an email from a reader who says, checked your book out of the library, loved it, fawning all over it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, why don't you go get yourself a copy and put a review on Amazon while you're at it? But at the same time, I appreciate it. I'm grateful when I spot
Sure.
something, spot me in a library. All right, let's
Sure.
talk about some challenges. As a writer, any kind of challenging, what's the most challenging part of the writing process for you? Let's put it that way.
Gosh, that's hard. Every part of the process has its own challenge. I guess writing the first draft is the hard thing. I tend to, when I'm writing a novel, I tend to want to get all the events down. And I do that sometimes at the expense of what is my character going through emotionally? What are they thinking? How are they reacting to something? I tend to just want to, get the action down so I know where the story is going. And I love revising. To me, revising is a fun thing to do because I know I'm making it better. I'm taking out stuff I didn't like. I'm fixing things and making the book closer to what I want it to be. So I guess for me, getting a good first draft down, it's the hardest part. That blank screen, like you say, you look at that blank screen and that can be intimidating. So what I typically will do is go over what I wrote the day before and do minor edits on that just to get myself back in the swing of it. And I usually try to promise myself, I'm not good with word count, but I try to promise myself I'm going to get at least through a scene. and get a good scene down, and then I'll feel like I've accomplished something. And if it's going well, I'll get, another scene and then another. But my minimum is to try to get one scene finished so I can feel like I've really done something. And I do that old Hemingway trick of finish in the middle. Don't finish the last thing you work on. Leave it open-ended. And then it'll be bugging you. You're going to want to get back to it and finish that. So that's another trick that I use to keep the writing rolling.
Wow. I heard that part about the middle. That's very interesting. I think also, as a poet, that's where we're a little bit different. Me, I'll hold to a word count because, here's a bulletin. Some days are a little bit easier than other days. And if we only wait for the days where our mind has decided this is the day where I really feel like I can do this, we'll never get past chapter one.
You
So,
bet.
we call it grinding a little bit, like watching a golfer going around a golf course, and they'll say, I shot a decent score, but no hole was easy. I was grinding, I was working, nothing came easy to me. And other days, it's effortless. But that's how we hold to a word count. When we realize that some days we'll be grinding. But for you, as a poet, and as I said, I've dabbled a little bit. I'll tell you about that off the air. Okay. But I know that a one-page poem could take me a month for me, or maybe not quite that long, but I'm really micromanaging those words. When you're cutting loose a business book, in that first draft, I'm recommending people don't even look over your shoulder. Think of yourself like a racehorse with blinders on. Keep moving forward.
Absolutely.
Don't get paralyzed by editing. You're not there yet. Keep expanding. Keep going.
Oh,
So,
absolutely.
yeah, I think that's where we're a little different, where you're working in smaller snippets and then you're really managing what you've done.
Well, yeah, but it's still a two-step process. The draft is one thing and the editing is another, So I try to always get through a piece and try to get it down on paper. My first drafts of poems are usually terrible. I mean, they often just look like a blob on the page, There's no form to it. There's no shape or anything. And then I go back and I try to see, okay, how can I add music to this? How can I add some rhythm to this? How can I maybe use repetition to tie some parts of it together? I can revise and revise and revise a poem over a very long period. And the advice is typical, put it away for a couple of days and then look at it with fresh eyes. Sometimes I have poems that I've put away for months or even a couple of years, and then I go back to it and all of a sudden, oh, now I can see what's wrong with this. Now I can see what I have to fix. But it's a process just like any other piece of writing. It's more condensed, it's generally smaller unless you're writing a book-length poem, which people do. But it's still that same process. You do your first draft and then you come back and you make it the way you want it to really be, because the first draft never is.
Right. You said something, to me that was poetic just now when you started talking about the music. And I wrote a book. I don't talk about the titles of my books or anything, so we're not talking about my books. But I'll tell you a title they didn't like that I liked. I wish they had taken it. One of them was going to be called "It's Not the Words, It's the Tune," and
Oh, yeah.
it's a business book. It's really
Right.
about not what we're saying, but how we say it.
Right.
And so that really resonates with me, and I almost see it like you're putting sauce on a meal. The protein is you kind of grinding out that poem in a sense, or for us, our chapter. But the sauce, which really flavors the meal, I
Right.
heard a chef once say 75% of the meal is the sauce. That's the part. That's that rhythm that you're looking for in the tune, and I find that fascinating, and I would think that would probably come second, just getting that manuscript done, that chapter done, that poem done. But that's fascinating. I really connect with that from not just a writer but a speaker. As a professional speaker, there's as a professor, there was those professors that knew how to stay in the curriculum and teach what was on, in the syllabus. And then there were others that got a little saucy, put a little sauce on it, put some
And
case
that
studies
class
on
was
it.
so much more fun, right?
Right. For the students slash the readers and the teacher slash the writer,
Sure.
but that's the sauce. And so
Yeah.
I just think that's really cool that you kind of go that way.
Yeah.
You've been at this a little while. Do you find that your writing process has evolved at all? I mean, from when you started to now, any little shortcuts, ideas, things that you've sort of learned over the years that's kind of helped your process along?
Gosh, that's a difficult question. Yeah, I've been writing for a really long time. I think I used to worry more at the beginning, and feel more self-conscious, am I any good at this? Is this something I should even be doing? I used to worry more about what people would think of me and my work. And I think I've, with a little bit of maturity, you get outgrow that and then realize, that your work is what's important. It's what you do. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not like if somebody else writes a great book, your book's going to be terrible. You just have to write what it is that you write, what gives you the enjoyment, what makes you feel satisfied, and not worry about all that other stuff. I call it po biz, all the other stuff that's out there. I don't worry about that anymore. Life's too short to worry about that stuff. Just
Yeah.
get the writing done and don't worry about it.
And how about the publishing side? Was that creeping into your worries, or were you just
Oh,
divorcing yourself from that, saying, no, I'm
no.
focused on a manuscript?
No. When I'm writing, I don't even think about the publication process until way at the end, because then it's going to color your writing. You're going to start thinking, how can I make this more publishable? And that's not the question that you should be asking yourself. So I just focus on the writing. And then after that's done, when I think the book is ready for the public to see, that's when I start worrying about the publication and all that. And this particular book, because I wrote mostly in form, I learned about this competition for poets who receive forms, and I submitted it and was astonished when it won. I mean, I was it's the first time I'd ever done anything like that. My previous book was almost entirely free verse. So that was great fun. But that's not top of mind when you start out writing your draft and doing your research or whatever the beginning process is. That's always later on.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you said that because I think it stops people in their tracks sometimes because they're obsessing on, do I want to go hybrid? Could I go conventional? What does the self-publishing look like? Is Ingram as good as I hear? They're all over the place. They don't have two words on a piece of paper yet. And so dig in, folks. You're listening to, a really good author here tell you, actually, I don't know about you. But for me, that's the fun part. It's almost a reward when I get this manuscript done. Then I get to go into the stadium and take my bat and go up to the plate. But I don't get to go in without a manuscript, without something written. So I'm with you. I think it's distracting. And my first book came out in '93, but we didn't have a self-publishing arm back then, and so it was a distraction. Because you kind of felt like, well, what if I just am doing this for, and still we put our nose down and said, then I'll write it for me, daggone it, but I'm writing it. But now there's just really no excuse to get distracted because there's way too many solutions to that question. Let's look at the drawer like you just told us and just focus on the beauty, the work itself. We do that, good things will happen, right?
Really, and because every book needs to be its own thing, I don't think you can force something into a package that it doesn't need to be in. You have to let the book tell you what it wants to be. Like you say, a book finds you. The book then tells you how it wants you to progress with it, what it wants you to do. If you pay attention to the work, it'll let you know what's what. If you're paying attention to the outside world, you're going to try to mold it into something it's not supposed to be, and you can totally ruin it. Anytime I try to write something that I thought, well, maybe this will work for this situation, it never works. So I just have to let each thing be its own thing and just go with it.
Yeah. We start a new show called "A Book Won't Leave You Alone," because they will, and it's a good thing. But when you're in the writing process, it actually won't leave you alone. It starts tapping you on the shoulder while you're driving, at 2 in the morning, while you're brushing your teeth. But it's not an annoying tap. It's a creative tap typically.
It's wonderful. I
Yeah.
love it when that happens. It's like
Yeah.
such a gift when the words just come to you and this idea or this poem or the shape or whatever, and you're sitting, like you said, at 2 in the morning, you wake up and go, that's how I can fix that. Now,
Yeah.
this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
think it's a gift and I love it.
Me too. And just so you know, keep a tape recorder, your smartphone, keep something by the bed, because I know it's happened to me a number of times, but I will wake up and I think, oh, that's terrific. There's no way I'll forget this by the morning. It's too juicy. And all I wake up in the morning with is something juicy. I had
Right.
something really good.
Yeah.
So don't that don't that's fool's gold. Just scribble it down, couple of words. You'll sleep better, trust me, because the first
Absolutely.
time you forget it in the morning, you're not going to sleep well the second time. So let's get
Oh, you're
something by
right.
the bed, but build a process for
You
it.
bet. You
You
bet.
won't be burned that way. All right, one last question, I'll let you
Sure.
go. And you've already given us a couple, including the last one, but one more piece of advice that you'd give an aspiring writer who's listening, be it for poetry, writing, but just one more tip. Maybe something you wish you'd known when you started out yourself.
I think one of the things we all have to do is develop a thick skin, because when you write and when you finally submit something for publication, the chances are really high that it's going to get rejected and that you're going to get rejected over and over and over again. And that feels awful, especially the first few times it happens to you, but it can really undermine your confidence and just make you feel terrible. And you have to understand that everybody gets rejected. Even really big name writers get rejected. I know incredibly accomplished poets who will say, oh, I'm so bummed. I just got another rejection. And it happens to everyone. So understand that it is part of the process. And if you do get a rejection, it's an opportunity to look at what you sent out. See where it may have fallen short. What can you do to make that better so that the next time you send it out, your chance is better that it will get accepted? And you always, if you get something rejected, a poem or a book or whatever, you immediately send it back out again. Take a look, try to tweak it, and then get it back out as soon as possible, because no one gets published without sending things out. So to me, it's really important to understand rejection is all part of the process. It will make you a better writer. And try not to take it personally, because it happens to us all.
Well said. And sometimes to add to that, sometimes it's just timing. I know that
Right.
with one of my books, as an example, I had a book that I found a conventional publisher for in 2 weeks, and then I th and sold well. And I thought, ha, well, they'll be beating the door down for me now. And the second book took almost 3 years to find a publisher. And when and I was circling back to publishers, and finally, Simon and Schuster said, yeah. And I remember going in there and thinking, you've already rejected me a few things. Timing. It was just timing. We had a book in that space. It's now time for us to replace that book in that space. So not only is it not a reflection on you, but frequently, if you're going conventional, it's just the timing of the manuscript. They may have just published something similar, a year ago. And so it's just not time. And if it's your publisher, you don't want them publishing a book competing with yours 3 months after it got put on the shelf. So we got to be understanding. I just note to self, would love to send a few notes going, hey, when you reject us, you think you could just do it in a little bit more compassionate way. But oops, that's me on Fairy Tale Island. Okay. So thick skin is what we just heard. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Great tips, great
Thank you,
ideas.
Bob.
I it kind of pushed me back to maybe it's time for me to nest again and get back into the poetry side of things. I think
Sure.
it's exciting. And so you've given me a little spark there, and I appreciate that.
Great.
How do people get a hold of you?
My website, www.patvaldata.com, is probably the easiest way.
Okay. And would you spell that name just in case not everyone's a subject matter expert on
Sure,
Valdata?
sure. The name is Patvaldata. That's all one word.
Perfect. Good. Okay. Well, again, absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Well,
And
thank
thank you
you.
so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, Rob. I had a great time. You're a very easy interviewer. Thank you so much for making it so much fun.
I'm grateful. Thank you. Well, we'll do it again as well as we can next time, everybody. Until then, stay safe.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's guest author, we'd love you to rate, review, and share this episode with others. If you'd like more information on today's guest or the Maryland Writers Association, please visit our website at marylandwriters.org. You can also find out about the history of the Maryland Writers Association by listening to our first podcast, Episode 0.